Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right, we got Jamie Kennedy coming up. Lots of fun to have with him and news as well.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Nashville, Tennessee. A 25-year-old man was charged with public indecency, trespass, and public intoxication when he was found naked and doing jumping jacks in a McDonald's women's bathroom. Definitely not a Jew.
Jamie Kennedy has joined us. Jamie, obviously actor and a stand-up as well. Got some movies coming out. We remember looking down the list here. Three Kings. I forgot about that one. That was a fun movie.
It was great, Three Kings.
All the Scream movies as well. The podcast, Hate to Break It to You, with Jamie Kennedy, available now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. Good to see you again, Jamie.
Good to see you, Adam. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Are you going out and doing much stand-up these days?
Yeah, you know, last week I played a parking structure top floor.
Right.
Played a baseball diamond. Played a couple of fields. A carport, you know, next week possibly a bush. I mean, I don't know where it's going.
I think I'm going to play a few bouncy castles with the audience just outside. That would kind of make sense, right?
I mean, it's great because I've never felt more appreciated. Like, I really do love it and people need it, but it's different, but it's definitely like, hey, man, this is the new thing.
I'm looking down on some of your facts on your bio here. It says auditioned for over 80 commercials and never booked one.
No, well, it's half. I did, and then I got the 81st one. So, like, I didn't get anything for 80 commercials, and then the next one, I got a good one.
I would have definitely quit in the mid-70s if I were you. That's the difference. Also, a movie coming up called Last Call, and it's funny because this movie co-stars Bruce Dern and yourself and Jeremy Piven. And I once said to Jeremy Piven, like, I've never booked anything I've auditioned for ever. And he's like, I book everything I audition for every time. And I was like, how do you do that? And he's like, I fucking prepare. And I was like, oh, I'm out. I didn't know. I thought you had a magic bead that you rubbed or something. I didn't know it was actually involved preparation.
Well, you know, his family has a fairly prestigious acting school in Chicago, the Pivens.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Hey, where do you come from, Jamie Kennedy?
I'm from Philly. Upper Darby, I don't know, it's right outside of West Philly. Some peeps from there, Sherry O'Terry, Tina Fey. Mm-hmm. Over the bridge, Kevin Bacon wasn't too far.
And when did you come out to L.A.? Like, what were you doing in high school? Was the plan to act? Was the plan to do stand-up?
Honestly, I had no plan. I knew I was attracted to the business, and I had no idea. And I took a local acting class at the end of high school. And long story short, my friend's mom was like a local theater actress, and she was like a huge star. Because she had a local Jiffy commercial running with Bill Burge. You know Bill Burge?
The linebacker?
Yeah, she had a Jiffy Lube commercial. And it was like, you're the Jiffy Lube lady. But it was like a regional, like the tri-state area.
Bill Burge was an all-pro middle linebacker, number 66, for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, look at you pulling that up.
I know football.
And so, yeah, he was the guy. He was like the Jiffy Lube guy. And long story short, she said, I know you want to be an actor. There's a movie coming to town. I think you can become background. And I'm like, what's that? She's like, atmosphere. I'm like, what's that? She's like, an extra. And I was like, oh, okay. And I went down and I met the third AD, and boom, next thing I know, I'm on the set of Dead Poets Society.
Wow.
Wow.
And I was in that for 4 days. And once I did that, I was like, okay, I think this is the path I'm supposed to be on.
More importantly, did you ever meet Bill Burgi? Bill Burgi was the last. You know, it's kind of interesting in a world where everyone in sports, where everyone gets bigger, like baseball players are getting bigger and NBA and all that kind of stuff. Middle linebackers in the NFL are getting smaller. Bill Burgi was one of the big bearded, like stout Merlin Olsen kind of dudes who couldn't run very well, but he's like a big dude. You wanted that big dude. Now you look at, you just watch the Super Bowl, all these guys are lightning fast, but they're not even that big anymore. They just want the speed back there.
Yeah, he was like that type, I don't know when he went to college, but like that Penn State type of dude.
Yeah, Matt Millen.
They were like, yeah, that type of dude. And he was the Jiffy Lube guy. Anytime you went to Jiffy Lube,
so
there was a big standing.
So the first movie you get into is Goodwill? Oh, no, Dead Poets Society. Dead Poets Society, sorry. Dead Poets Society. Yeah, so Dead Poets Society. So that's your first paid gig.
I mean, it was crazy. I was working at Domino's, and I was like, they asked me a bunch of questions. Will you cut your hair? Blah, blah, blah. Do you have like a sweater vest from the 50s? I was like, I can find it. And yeah, so I was an extra, and I was on it for three or four days. And yeah, it was like literally I was at Domino's the night before delivering, you know, a medium hamburger, you know, extra pepperoni. And then the next day I'm next to Robin Williams watching him put a baby carrot in hummus. It was nuts.
And so how long after that did you come out to L.A.?
That was probably about 5 months, because I knew I wanted to kind of come to L.A. because I'd visited before, and I knew that there was something here. I don't know. I didn't know anything about the business, anything about acting, definitely nothing about comedy. And then I just said, I'm going to save up enough. I'm going to try to go out for a year and see if I can do it. And when I got the extra thing, I was like, well, maybe I can become a professional extra. I really wanted that.
I remember when we would have you on Loveline all those years ago when you were doing, I think, the Jamie Kennedy experiment. What's it called?
Probably, yeah.
That was a fun show. I don't know if you guys watch that show, but Jamie would do the full characters and do the full thing. But I would always, I think I was laughing about it with you when you're on Loveline, which is during the reveal, at some point, Jamie would like rip off his prosthetic nose and wig and go, "You got X'd," which is good if you were watching. But if you were in season one and you're one of the people, you didn't know what being X'd was.
I hadn't caught on
so
yet.
So Jamie would go, "You got X'd." And the person would go,
"I did.
Is my dog still alive?" Go, "No, you've been X'd. You've been X'd." And they'd go, "Do I have to pay for the car or not?" Like, "No, no, you've been X'd." Like, they didn't know what it was.
Is that like ketamine? What? Yeah. Like, actually, we would go further. We would say, "You've been X'd," and then they would go, "What?" And then we go, "It's my new hidden camera show called the Jamie Kennedy Experiment." And then that wasn't enough. And we go, "There's a camera there. There's a camera there. There's a like literally, yeah." It was. We did that pretty much the whole series, by the way. It.
What did that run on? Was that an MTV show? What was that on?
WB.
Oh,
that
WB.
That was the WB before they got all sexy.
Yeah. Is the WB still rolling along?
It's the CW now.
Oh, it's
all
the
they
CW.
Do is like dramas. But yeah, the WB, that was, it was fun, man. It was like having your own little, I had my own little playpen over there. It was great.
Can I ask Jamie a question from years back? It's not on the bio, but Jamie, I really enjoyed you in Romeo and Juliet, Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. And how difficult was that as a young actor? You said you came out, you know, kind of learned acting out here. How difficult was that to master the prose? First of all, you're doing Shakespearean prose, but also you're also dressing in kind of modern, futuristic. Talk about that a little bit, how you were able to pull it off.
It was crazy. You know, like I was saying, I auditioned for a bunch of commercials, didn't get anything. And then I got one, and then the one led to another and another, and then the guest spot and stuff. And so the next thing I know, you know, after many auditions, I got in the Romeo and Juliet. And I knew it was going to be cool because it was different. Because everybody knew me in the scene as a comedian, but no one knew me in Hollywood. So I was like, I'm going to show this other side and no one will know if I'm going to be funny, you know. But I was really spoiled. I mean, I hate to sound like an old man, but it was like a different time in the 90s. Like, you know, we had – not that we don't have them now, but there was – I feel like auteurs were more able to run free. You know,
It was a sweet spot for sure for guys like Baz Luhrmann, who just were given carte blanche to do kind of a risky movie, you know, with the Shakespearean dialogue, a pre-Titanic, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very risky. It was – he created a modern take on Shakespeare. We were down in Mexico City. I was supposed to be there for 4 weeks. I was there for 9 weeks. He had all these young actors. But look, he did the music. He wrote the script. He produced. He directed. He knew. He is editing in his head. The first scene I was doing, I was very nervous. And then he was like, you know, try this, try that. So I was very fortunate because I went from him, who allowed me to try. Wes, who allowed me to try. David O. Russell says, improvise. So Tony Scott. It was like, try. So I went with like all these amazing A-list directors that would tell me to try. And then I would like start doing TV and I'd do a guest spot, you know, on a TNT show, season 11. They're like, you left out an and.
Right.
Regimented.
And so like, it was a beautiful time. I'm just saying I loved working on films because films and those guys seem to be free. And I don't know, things got a little bit more corporate. I don't know. Maybe it's me.
I think everything in life is swinging hard one direction or the next. So I say when everyone says to me, you know, what's the future hold? Because people come to me sometimes, they go, you seem to have a good handle on like where we're heading. Where are we heading? I think we're just heading for extremes. I think there's going to be more like crazy big Disney blockbuster superhero shit, and then there's going to be some really cool, smaller, interesting, independent stuff. But the middle, I think the middle, it's kind of like the middle class. Like we're going to have, you know, it's like California. We have super poor people and super rich people, not so much the middle class. And I always say the future is going to be half the people will be in safe spaces and the other half are going to the octagon. That's just where it's going to be. And by the way, speaking of the octagon, do you say is it Baz Luhrmann?
Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann. In the I don't know what Baz Luhrmann looks like, but the toughest guy on the planet is Baz Rutten.
Not Baz Luhrmann. He looks like Tom York.
We may, if we can get a Baz Rutten and a Baz Luhrmann, I think we're going to find the biggest chasm in Baz's ever. Find Baz Rutten. Or is it
Baz Rutten?
Yes.
He's the fighter.
He's the scariest. I would label him... Like, you know how they have the sexiest woman over 50 or whatever?
Sure.
Scariest man over 63. That's where Baz Rutten. Baz Rutten would win hands down. You got to watch the commercial. There's an infomercial where he's like punching his punch dummies. You know, it's like the Baz Rutten, you know, punch king. And he is just an insane man. He's also one of these guys who's bald. Sorry, Brian. Back when it meant something, like that meant you were
Johnny come lately.
Yes, back when bald right. was a commitment, and it meant you're fucking badass. Not your version of
not
bald.
Johnny shaved lately. Now
try to find Baz. Is it Rutten with a T?
Yeah, they spell Baz differently though.
Oh wait, One of them's a Baz Gags type, right?
Right.
And the other one is...
Baz is B-A-Z.
Oh.
Bazmark is his name, which is a pretty badass name.
Bazmark?
Yeah.
When I Google Baz and, you know, all these names, all that comes up are various Israeli Air Force Jets. So that must be a Baz of some kind.
Well, we'll find Baz rooting, and then if we can find that stupid infomercial, you watch that commercial and your fucking hands hurt just watching Baz or Baz. So, Jamie, you come out here. You have all this like success. It's kind of weird at the beginning when it just feels so. You know, the thing about success, success feels very natural. It's the lack of success which bumps you. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of like success is kind of like one of those videos where the 7-year-old kid has leukemia and they hand him the ball during the Nebraska football practice, and he's just kind of running, and everyone's like pretending to dive. To that kid, it feels very normal. Feels like, this is how it should be.
So you're saying success feels like that?
Yeah, it kind of feels like, I used to, when I started out in this business, it was like, I just go do one successful TV show and then go do another successful TV show. And it was always like, that's what I do.
I had 5 years where I had nothing in the beginning. And then, once I got on a run, I got on a run. And then, you have your ups and downs. But definitely, you go from thing to thing. And it is. You start getting very used to it.
The body action system with Baz, B-A-S, I guess.
Yes, Baz.
I've never seen this.
Neither.
You better slide a cookie sheet underneath that office chair of yours. Because there's going to be some pan dripping, especially you, Gina. I'll show you Baz.
From MMA legend Baz Rutten.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
How'd you like to be hit by that guy?
Jesus Christ.
As you can see, now you have a sparring partner that can stand up to some of the strongest people on the planet.
His accent's scary.
Yeah, where are we from?
Your individual exercises.
We're from Kick-Ass Estonia.
Up to 30 times more effective. Do it all at once and have a lot more fun. Scientifically,
this is probably the ultimate drunken late night. I'm buying that bad boy. I'm gonna kick some ass.
It's like Norway and Jersey.
He's from the Netherlands. How old is Baz Rutten? Because, again, there's no scarier man over the age of 63.
I thought I took in every infomercial, and I have not seen that one during the pandemic.
You got to sleep over.
55.
Oh, he's 55. Shit. All right. Well, then he has the 55. He'll hold that strap is what I'll say. He's only 55. I feel like he's been around for so damn long. Yeah. All right. Shall we? We got some news coming up. You want to, Jamie? Want to hang with us and gangbang some news with us?
All right. Gangbanging news.
We will. We'll take a break. Come back with Jamie Kennedy, and we'll do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grant. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Well, we've been saying goodbye to a lot of greats lately, and we got another one. Larry Flint, the publisher and founder of Hustler magazine, has died at 78 years old. Sources tell TMZ the controversial pornographer died Wednesday morning in L.A. from heart failure. And in case you're not familiar, he launched Hustler magazine in 1974. His freedom of speech battles were documented in the 96 film, of course, People versus Larry
First
Flint.
First Amendment activist.
Right. Woody Harrelson, Courtney Love. In 78, Flint was shot by serial killer Joseph Paul Franklin. That's when he was paralyzed. He even tried his hands at politics, running for president in 84 and for governor of California in 2003.
I think he was rolling for president, but let's not put too fine a point on it. He had a couple things. He was shot by a serial killer who was just doing like a little publisher clearing, like on the side.
I don't know if you zero in on that as a theme.
He had.
Let me look him up.
I interviewed Larry Flint on Loveline, and I have a couple memories. I had a memory of him explaining that he has sex because he put a pump in his penis.
Right. like it, the Nike pump.
Yeah, put the bladder in there, but the pump's in the nutsack. By the way, God bless him for using that nutsack for good. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like, for me, it's just flopping around, sticking to the side of my leg when I'm sweaty. Yeah.
Getting, and for what?
Getting caught and shit, sitting on it when I climb into my car. Like, there's nothing going on down there. He actually used his. You know, he put an actual pump in his. He was on the podcast in 2011. I forgot about that. He had a driver, chauffeur, and I don't think anyone calls their driver chauffeurs anymore, but isn't chauffeur a better title than driver? It's kind of like...
I always thought that with waitress and server.
Server. I know. Driver, server. I mean, it sounded like a fucking indentured servant.
Yeah.
So we went out to his car after the show. He had his gold-plated wheelchair in the trunk of the car. Like, the driver would, like, get him into it was like a big Cadillac, and then he'd collapse the wheelchair and throw it in the back of the trunk. And he had some issues of hustler back there. Like, I was like, oh, thank you very much. You know what I mean? Like, I got a little parting gift. He's like, there you go.
Good.
He may have even been the one to give me Ron Jeremy's dildo, but I don't know. I can't recall.
Wow.
I just forgot that.
Yeah.
Why would he have had Ron's dildo? That's it.
Why wouldn't he have had it? I think I'm going to put that question right back at you, Jamie.
Ridiculous.
I need one good fucking reason why Larry Flynt. By the way, if anyone was to travel with Ron Jeremy's dildo,
wouldn't it make sense?
It would be Larry Flynt.
I think the term beaver, I definitely credit to him. Like, I remember seeing the first Playboy was like the high end airbrush, but Hustler's where you got that reality check.
Welcome to the NFL. That's what Bill Berge would say when he dropped the forearm shiver on you. Also, some of the most racist cartoons ever. People forget. Oh yeah, they had cartoons.
Playboy had some, like, sort of playfully blue cartoons.
They'd have, like, the Amorous Grandma or something like that. There are two cartoons that I remember very clearly from old Hustler magazines I had when I was, like, 19. One was, and I don't even think this is a joke. I think this is just flat-out racist. It was a black man opening the door to, like, his apartment. And there was a giant cockroach banging his black wife. That was it. There were no words.
No caption.
There's no caption. That was just it. Like, surprise black guy. Like, being cuckolded by a cockroach, I guess. That would have worked for a caption. They had another one. This is borderline racist, but kind of funny. It was just a picture of two basketball players waist down with their, like, shorts around their ankles, white guy, black guy, huge cock, said Magic's Johnson. And then the other one said Larry's Bird. And it was a small dick.
Okay.
I was like, all right, that's good.
That's cute.
Yeah, that's cute. I'm going to pin this one to my refrigerator. I'll run it up the flagpole. See if my stepmom, Lynn, salutes.
Well, I have a little bit of news on the serial killer. So he was a serial killer, and he was executed by lethal injection. His other name, by the way, was the Racist Killer. So,
he drew up some of those cartoons before he shot
Larry.
That's what
I'm thinking. An American white supremacist and serial killer. So he's diverse. And he received 6 life sentences as well as 2 death sentences. And he killed a bunch of people. And he tried to kill Larry Flynt and civil rights activist Vernon Jordan.
Oh,
so I don't
really?
Know if there was a free speech, civil rights theme.
Oh,
I don't
interesting.
Know.
You disproved of all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. For a guy,
he's a complicated man.
No one understands him like this woman. Larry Flynt shot in 78, had a pretty good run or roll there for a guy, you know, not in fantastic shape. You know, maybe the doctors didn't think he'd see the 2000s. You know, pretty good run.
Good night.
Mm-hmm.
Use the ball, like you said.
That's right.
Do they have any of those old racist hustler cartoons? Is there? I don't know what the internet has anymore. Do they have like old hustler cartoons?
Oh, it's probably all out there somewhere.
Yeah, they do have old ones. I haven't found the ones yet of that you particularly
find
mentioned.
Any other good racist ones?
Let me look.
Because the theme to at least 40 to 50% of them was just flat out racism.
Yeah. Poor Google search for Chris. He's going to be flagged so many times. While he looks for that, let's talk about another man who we miss, who keeps on giving even after he's shuffled off this mortal coil. Alex Trebek's wardrobe from Jeopardy has been donated to the homeless for use during job interviews. According to Deadline, 14 suits, 58 dress shirts, 300 ties, and various other items of clothing that once belonged to him have been gifted to the Doe Fund. That's an organization that provides paid work, housing, and vocational training for the homeless. It was his son's idea, suggested he do that. Meanwhile, and I think we talked about this before, but just in case, because it bears repeating, in 1998, Alex Trebek donated 62 acres in the Santa Monica Mountains to be used as a wildlife corridor and as a free public space. Back then, the property that's now called the Trebek Open Space was worth about $2 million, and he donated that.
What year? Sorry.
That was 98.
Oh, my God.
62 acres. And now it's worth $25 million.
In Santa Monica?
The Santa Monica Mountains.
I would think that's worth $200 million now.
It is just mountain space, but still.
It's got to be weird for the homeless guy pulling up for the interview, and he's wearing a suit by Botany 500. Because that was always the game show, The Wardrobe for Bob McAllister by Botany 500. That was the, I don't know, there was like Hager slacks. Remember Hager?
Yeah.
Sansevieria slacks and Botany 500 was like what they would provide.
Botany 500, that's a, wow.
Were any of them Van Heusen? Why am I thinking of Van Heusen?
Yeah, they did the dress shirts, I think.
Yeah.
But Botany 500 has got to be.
Never a Joseph A. Bank.
This predated Botany 500 was like 70s, 80s stuff. And then, oh God, poor Chris. I'm sending on these wild goose chases. There was a, oh God. All right. So for local commercials, oh God, I'm trying to think. There was, Clothiers. There was a all right. You do your next year. I'm gonna figure out the name of this local clothier. It was the greatest. Don't you guys miss your local commercials that like our kids will never enjoy now?
Absolutely. Like, I used to when Jamie was talking about the local Jiffy Lube lady and what a hero she was. I used to do local stuff in Kansas City, and I mean I thought I was top. There was one. There was a one little clothing boutique called Cleopatra's Closet. And I got to say, walk like an Egyptian into Cleopatra's Closet, where we have dozens of looks for prom. And I mean, that place doesn't exist anymore. It hardly existed then.
This commercial, which was a clothing commercial hosted by the Jewish person on the planet, was called Zachary All. That's what it was.
And I remember Zachary All.
Zachary All. And this, I don't know what All meant. I don't know who Zachary was. He was having very earnest conversations about suits. That was his thing. And it was all Edward G. Nalbandian. Oh. Maybe it was an Armo.
Yeah.
But Zachary All was a great one. And there was also when you could look forward to the local one where like the jacket outlet would have their all leather sale once a year with leather and suede and all that kind of shit. And it was like somehow more shit we weren't gonna purchase for the Corollas, but seemed interesting. Maybe this is all keeping in theme with the Bill Burgi local spot.
It all starts with Bill.
It all and probably ends. Did Jamie, you got any local spots? Can you remember your Philadelphia weird local spots or
Jimmy Lube was national, but they had that as the local. But I also remember we had a music store called the Sound of Upper Darby.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically where you buy your speakers and you buy your boom boxes. And that was like literally like a commercial you would see on Saturday afternoon. You know, like you would only see them on right. UHF. Do people know what that is?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I do.
Literally got like one channel. You know?
Yeah.
Did we lose everybody?
No, we're right here.
We're going for Zachary All.
We got the Zachary All commercial. Let's look at it. Tell me how dynamic this guy is. I don't think he's a paid spokesmodel. I think he's got something to do with this company.
Well, this is an L.A. local here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wilshire.
You know, it's really almost a comical thing the way people kick the word discount around. They say, we discount. Zachary All has been discounting clothing for 26 years. When we first opened up, people didn't think we'd stay in business on the Miracle Mile for a month. 26 years later, we're one of the biggest clothing companies in the country. Why? Because we started out giving people value for their money. We gave them a selection that nobody else gave them. And we gave them quality. We stood behind the product. Come down and see us.
Zachary All.
Well, you know what? I'm getting, first of all, he's got a, you know, he puts a couple of packs of Paul Malls down a day.
Mm-hmm.
No filter. Second of all, I'm getting a Murray from Goodfellas vibe, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting a Murray vibe out of that.
Yeah, maybe he's wearing a piece.
That's one of the businesses Amazon's killing. You know I can't find that right now. You know it's probably closed.
Yeah.
Probably.
I remember my family was so fucked up, I would sit home when I was 11 and go, who buys a suit?
And why?
Yeah, forget.
Unless you're going to court.
I guess. Dead. Yeah. It's a Walgreens now. Oh, the Zachary All has become a Walgreens. You see, kids?
Oh, man.
I mean, remember this, the simple, how about the potential of just watching a local commercial and going, I can go drive 4 miles and be at that place and walk into that particular place, not one of the places, the place.
And they'd flash the phone number. Well, of course, no area code. Why is there area code?
Right. Maybe that swarthy Armenian gentleman will be there to greet me when I come in.
Did you guys have Shoe Carnival? The thing that made Shoe Carnival special. And
Wait, Adam, this is a test. No, we're not gay.
No, we're not gay. Jamie's well, not either.
Interesting you should say that, because the big job, the glamorous job at Shoe Carnival in Overland Park, Kansas, was there was a guy, kind of like a strip club DJ. He was up on a podium, and he would play the songs and like give you all like the new hot discount. Like, it's 3 o'clock. That means everything with a red dot is 10% off. And then he'd play more like oldies. And I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. I mean, I was 7, but that seemed pretty glamorous. He was the DJ in the Shoe Carnival.
We should figure out jobs that we would have wanted when we were kids that we'd be miserable at now. I mean, I would
imagine.
I went the first time when I was like 19, I went to the Body Shop, like the strip club on Sunset Boulevard. And I went with a friend of mine that had like a featured dancer was there. And you couldn't order beer or anything, but you could order like soda, but you were over 18, you could go. And at a certain point, the strip club DJ was like making a joke, and I guess he was like doing his patter, and he was like, oh, Kit Nativitad's coming up on stage. Hey, fellas, quit your grin and drop your linen. Oh, by the way, clean up aisle 9. We need a new janitor in this joint or whatever. And after the show, I walked up to the DJ and I'm like, do you really need a janitor? Because I think I could definitely. I could be that man. I could definitely be the janitor here. That would be an awesome job. Like for me at 19, working at the body shop as a janitor would have been fucking awesome. And of course, the guy's like, what the fuck? No, get out of here. I was like, oh. Usually.
That's world renowned. That's like one of the few places still going on Sunset.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was replaced by the Zachary All for a while in the 90s, but now they're back.
Well, we have a hot follow-up on Springsteen, and turns out we may have been too hard on him. And remember, we had no details yesterday, but
I did not judge.
Oh, good. Because now he's back to being a hero, in my opinion. So it turns out he may have just been being a good guy when he got pinched for this DWI. The New York Post reports that he was riding his motorcycle when he was recognized by fans and asked to pull over and take a photo. And then one of them offered him a tequila shot, which he accepted. And the cops watched this. And as soon as he pulled away, they hit him.
Wow.
So the Asbury Park Press.
He took down the boss.
Yeah. And it gets worse. They report that Springsteen's blood alcohol content was 0.2, which is below Jersey's legal limit of 0.8. And he was arrested. The arrest took place on the Gateway National Recreation Area, which is federal land. So he's going to have a federal court date. They're making a big deal out of this.
If you're riding a motorcycle and you want to do it after a couple of pops, that's between you and your God. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're plowing along in a full-size SUV, you could take out a whole family. But on a motorcycle, you're just going to take yourself out.
Probably.
So
was it by – it's in Jersey. What part of Jersey? I mean, it gets some real
–
some open road down there.
Yeah, Sandy Hook, which is about 20 minutes from where he's from. Was it Rumson?
I don't know. You can't say no to a shot with a fan either.
Yeah.
You know, when fans want to do a shot, you got to do a shot. All right, that's him riding his motorcycle.
That's right.
He's fine.
But somebody is out of a job. The Kansas City Chiefs say Britt Reed is no longer employed by the team following his car crash last week that left a 5-year-old still critically injured. So the linebacker's coach, who's also the son of Andy Reed, the head coach, was involved. And we talked about this.
Oh, that story.
Yeah. Yeah. Involved in a car crash just days before the Super Bowl, which I think was a Thursday.
He's a linebacker's coach?
Yeah.
I wonder if he knows Bill Berge.
He's a little young. Andy Reid.
No one's too young to know Bill Berge.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So two children went to the hospital. One is critically injured. As TMZ reports, has not regained consciousness.
Oh, boy.
Reid admitted to having at least two drinks and taking Adderall just before getting into the car and eventually slamming into a vehicle that was pulled over to the side of the highway. Reid did not travel with the team to Tampa for the Super Bowl and will not have his contract renewed, according to TMZ.
You know who would be the most kick-ass middle linebacker in the league? Boz Berge. You take Bill Berge and Boz Rudin and put them together, and that's a fucking killing machine.
One super Mike, middle linebacker.
That's right.
He could probably still do it at 55, the way he looks.
Is he 55 today? Not like when he shot that info thing. God,
yeah,
I feel like the guy's such a legend. I feel like he's been around for a while. All right, find more Boz Rudin punching something. You'll laugh your ass off. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grad.
Oh, good. So here is a hero, a North Hollywood hero, that I would say, oh, is this your dad? But I don't think so. This is a real calorie burner. 90-year-old North Hollywood resident Aaron Epstein. He's been a loyal AT&T customer since 1960, but as his technology needs have increased, his internet service wasn't keeping up. He wanted faster internet. So KTLA News reports that he placed two ads in the Wall Street Journal on February 3rd to vent about his frustration over AT&T's slow internet speed. It cost him $10,000. He said he kept calling and calling the internet company asking when the speed was going to be, you know, better. And they said it's just not available in your ear area. And hold on. So he took out an ad and said it's an open letter to Mr. John T. Stanky, CEO AT&T, and ended with the question, why is AT&T, a leading communications company, treating us so shabbily in North Hollywood? He placed the ad in newspapers in Dallas, where the company's executive offices are, and in New York to reach the investors. And it grabbed everybody's attention. Epstein said he received a call from the company the same day the ads ran and said they're going to see what they can do for him. AT&T spokesperson said in a statement that the company continually enhances its network, blah, 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 blah. But Epstein says if they don't speed things up, he might consider taking his business elsewhere.
I'm at 90.
90.
I'm from North Hollywood. Nobody there really needs the internet, and they don't need fast service.
He needs it lightning fast.
If we were talking, maybe Encino, Studio City, places like that, Sherman Oaks, those folks need some quick internet service. But North Hollywood.
Wow. You're a NoHo OG. My first place ever was Hartsook.
This is insanity because we were talking to – who were we talking to?
Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider. Yeah, he called Schneider. In. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Rob Schneider said his first place in North Hollywood was on Houston Street. So I grew up on Houston Street in North Hollywood in my grandma's old kind of beater junker rental house that we kind of flopped in. At a certain point, much later on, my dad bought his – second house that we moved to, which was on Hartsook. So we have two guests in a row where they lived on the street I grew up with. Hartsook is, I don't know, four or five streets away from Houston, runs right next to North Hollywood High. That's where I ended up going. What was your cross street, Jamie?
It was Magnolia, right there.
Wow.
Right there? That's where my...
Wait, before Adam says anything hateful about that area.
Fluky dog. There was a fluky dog. I would see out across the fluky dog. Now they put a Ralph's there.
Wow. Dude, that's
OG, NoHo. It finally, when I got there, they were like, NoHo, the NoHo Arts District. Now, just the other day, I was saw a big sign, NoHo. And I'm like, oh, they actually did it finally. I don't go there. But they did it 20 years after they said they're going to do it. But it's great. I love it.
And not only did they do it, but if you live there now, you wouldn't be in North Hollywood. You'd be in Valley Village.
Yeah.
Oh.
They renamed it over at Magnolia and Hartsook.
I built that Acme Theater, which is now a Stella Adler or whatever. I built that theater on Lancashire in NoHo in 1991 when they were trying to convert it into the NoHo Arts District, but it was still super dicey and fucked up and shitty from all that cyclical stuff where it's it was nice in the 50s and the 60s and then it got all shitty in the 70s and the 80s and then it started to pick back up again. But we were down there. That's where the Acme Theater was.
Just goes to show you that the word North is the most powerful in the English language, destroying dreams with one syllable. No, just north of North Hollywood.
North Hollywood, yeah, right off of Magnolia and Lancashire, and then Hartsook just runs right alongside Magnolia.
Yeah.
Wait, what was your cross street though? You named your parallel street. You need your cross street.
Look at you, Thomas Brother guy.
That's right.
How many people know that reference? Okay, so here I was Hartsook. It was Vineland. I was in between Vineland and Lincoln.
Oh,
if you're over by that Ralph's with the turnstile. Yeah.
You were there with that's where Sandler and Judd Apatow and Rob Schneider, and by the way, many guys in the rock and roll world. I think.
Big time rock and roll in my building.
Who?
There was a band. It wasn't like Motley Crue, but it was band that opened for
I think there was some Guns N' Roses. I talked to some guys out there.
LA Guns, like guys that got cast out when it was Guns N' Roses and they kind of combined the two bands. I had a couple of LA Super Guns group in my building.
So there's this weird thing. They had all these big apartment buildings and all huge. The actors and comedians and rock and rollers with some sprinkled in strippers seemed to live in these buildings. They all kind of landed here and it was affordable and safe-ish and everyone just sort of landed there. It was the least creative group with the least creative architecture and topography with the most creative people living in it. It didn't have that New York vibe, you know, but it's interesting that so many people landed in that three-block area between Vineland and Lancashire and in North Hollywood, and then all you want to do is move out of there as soon as you get there. So that's everyone. I think it worked with everyone's ambition.
It's three things I remember. It was so cheap; you could pay $400 a month in rent and have a great a big room with a big common area and have another two roommates. Once you went past Circus Liquors, it got a little dicey.
Yes.
And that Denny's is still there and it's still popping. And I think they're actually seating inside.
The Circus Liquor, if you can find Max.
That Circus Liquor is a staple.
Yeah, I just passed it.
You know Circus Liquor, Brian?
Nope.
Circus
Liquor. Yeah, you'll know it when you see the sign. Yeah. You'll know it.
It's the, Burbank and Vineland.
The Circus Liquor sign looked like the in Talladega Nights, like the Drunken Clown malt liquor. It looked like they pulled that off of the Circus Liquor sign. And I remember they would sell beer by the keg. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Brian, just as a movie reference, there was a big scene in Clueless when she gets robbed. That's
outside of Circus Liquor.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's a few movie robberies there.
Oh, sure.
Do we have racist hustler cartoons?
Some real life robberies.
Yeah. So these are actually really hard to find. But then I went deep into some message board, and this guy had a bunch of cartoons. So this I'll read you the quote. I come home after a hard night of robbery, rape, and murder, and she gives me a light beer. Have you ever tasted light beer?
Black family.
Black family.
Did that drop?
Yeah,
that
giant, drop. Giant all penis. These drops.
And then
this is a fish. He's fishing. The fish has a fishing rod in his hand, and the bait is a piece of watermelon. He's trying to catch a black man who's chasing after.
Dock.
This is like Klan propaganda.
I told you it was great, right? It's crazy. This is modern era shit. This is like the 80s.
No, in the 90s. Horrible.
Was I making any of this up?
No.
What's crazy didn't even say how bad it was.
There on a lot of these cartoons, the artist signed it. So we can track them down.
What?
Yeah, so
oh
this
my
is
God,
a,
the baby.
Whoa, we can
Now what
this one's really bad.
What is this one? Describe it, Max Powell.
There are so many levels of bad.
All right, they're in a nursery the hospital.
Yeah, and you have a bunch of baby skeletons with blood, and then one full black baby.
And
look at the picture in the window.
The babies, the skeleton babies are labeled Steven or whatever, and this one says McGowie, and he's got a fucking
tribesman.
It's a headhunter
kind of
thing.
The window is
fairly racist, but
oh my god!
And the caption is burp.
Yeah, it's
my god!
I'm only gonna sit still for 26 more of these.
There are a lot. We have one more loaded up. This is the quote is just like the old days, homemade Christmas decorations, and it's a black family hanging painted rats on their Christmas tree.
Jesus. And there's a full on pimp in the door.
Yes,
the dad isn't a dad. He is fucking slick.
Right, he's Rooster from Starsky and Hutch. Yeah. This is in the modern era, people. This stuff is not from the 50s or the 40s.
This looks like a hardcore like hate pamphlet someone would get to like get you out of the neighborhood. Like this is horrible.
Can we like deplatform Hustler or like retroactively this artist?
I was going to say if he didn't pass away, he would have been canceled after that today.
Yeah. Well, I should say that. Remember, I was looking all over the internet for Hustler stuff. They've done a pretty good job taking any of these out. I had to go deep into a message board where the guy claimed these are from Hustler. So.
Oh, they look
the dark web.
They look the style.
I think I set the table with my description of what those Hustler comics
it's
were like.
It's consistent with your description. I'll say that.
It's exact. The artist looks the same. I mean, I remember I remember reading many of these.
Yeah. And these were anonymously posted. So,
you know what I'm saying?
Did I exaggerate at all when I was explaining how racist Hustler was?
You undersold it.
Well, you know, I'm not as sensitive as many Americans, but
that was horrific. Truly, truly horrific.
It's crazy. Do we have any dates? I mean, again, it's not from the 50s. It's from the 80s. I mean, maybe the 70s, 80s, but probably well into the 90s.
I'm not seeing any.
Do you think they had one cartoonist who just did black people? Does that seem to be the conceit? He signed it, right? All right, tell Mike August to book this guy. Okay. He could be the 90-year-old guy from North Hollywood.
They're different signatures on him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All right, we're gonna get deeper into this world because Hustler was so. Hustler was always just sort of offensive anyway, so I think they kind of flew under everyone's radar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just a thing.
Yeah, like if you put these cartoons in Life magazine or Popular Science or
Nat Geo.
Almost any magazine.
Reader's Digest. Yeah, you're right. The list just keeps going. Yeah, I could keep going. Sports Illustrated especially. Yeah, this one.
Teen Beat.
Tiger Beat. Again, we should just stop ourselves because I think we would just keep going. But somehow in Hustler, I don't think there was one complaint letter. They probably got one that was like, oh, the chick on page 19, her snatch wasn't shaved correctly.
Yeah, far more compliments than complaints. Far more.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, one guy who did a lot of them, his name was Dwayne Tinsley. And he was accused of molesting his 13-year-old daughter in 84.
Well, that's not the Dwayne I know.
Yeah.
But can we separate the man from his art? You know what I mean? Like Wagner. I mean, that guy was a...
Anti-Semite. We still don't play Here Comes the Bride, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully.
Did he spend time on Hartsook?
Probably.
He was on Otsego Street, which is in between
Otsego.
We'll see if these guys are alive. This is insane.
Dead.
Oh, he's dead?
Yeah, he died in 2000.
That's
too bad.
It's going to be missed. All right, so now... This is good because when I talk about shit, I go, this shit was crazy. I don't use hyperbole. I'll actually round it down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I'm recalibrated.
You're recalibrated now.
As of
good.
Now, that's right.
All right. We'll do more of that. Well, I want to do Good Housekeeping and Hustler. Those are going to be the two periodicals.
I'll bet you'll find racist cartoons and Good Housekeeping, too. I mean...
I missed the love boat.
Listeners, send Chris your vile cartoons.
Poor Chris.
I probably had two Hustlers in my entire life, and there were probably three racist cartoons in each one. So I'm assuming if you had a subscription, there's going to be a lot out there.
Yeah. Which, just overall, this is just for the men folk. I know Playboy at least pretended to have that sort of girl next door, whatever, airbrush vibe. But which one was raunchier, Hustler or Penthouse?
I think Hustler was the raunchiest.
I'm going to say this, Gina, is that Playboy started as like the glamour doll of it, right?
The Barbie.
Penthouse was a little bit more edgy where you would see you would actually see kind of a body part. And Hustler was like almost gynecological. And it was pretty much.
It was educational.
And it was pretty much like whoever submitted got in. The guy was just like, yeah, all right, fill the page.
Okay.
It was the dollar store of those three, I would say.
Thank you.
And then there was that other super creepy guy, not Bob Guccione, but the other guy. He just named his magazine Screw.
Screw. Al Goldstein.
Screw. Al Goldstein.
Yeah.
No, not one of us. A Shonda for the Goyim.
Find some cartoons from Screw magazine. then Cherry and Wee. And we'll get into
that. Wee was a little high end.
Yeah.
Wee was more French about it.
We'll get into this tomorrow. Wow. All right. First. Oklahoma City Bricktown Comedy Club. I'm doing stand up there February 26th and 27th. Episode 3000 of this show is going to be next week, people. So look forward to that. Reno's coming up. Waukegan's coming up. Speaking of podcasts, Hate to Break It to You with Jamie Kennedy is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. And let's see. You can
Adam,
go to
3000.
3000.
You know, I think I was your second. I might have been your second guest.
Oh, we will definitely look it up because on the 3000th episode, I'm going to name every guest that's ever been on the show in numerical order. So we'll see if you pop up there. Website, jamiekennedy.com. Until next time, Sam Carolla for Gina Grad and Bob Bryan and Jamie Kennedy saying, mahalo.
Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can catch him on Instagram at Adam Carolla. And also give him a thumbs up on Facebook at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And pick up Adam's new book, Got New Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at AdamCarolla.com.